The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Seedlings Braille Books, special events happening November 7th through 13. That's an online auction. From GlobalBusinessLeadersMagazine.com, White Cane Coffee receives Top 20 Influential Leaders Award. From the NFB.org, the Reflections on Blindness Experienced as a Child. And from VentureBeat.com, Microsoft confirms hackers are actively exploiting Exchange zero-day flaws. From Seedlings.org, special events. Save the date for our fall online auction. Dates November 7th through 13, 2022. Take a sneak peek at the auction website at the hot link. Help raise $50,000 for 5,000 Braille books for children with vision loss. We are currently seeking event sponsors and prizes. Prizes, we are hoping for donations of gift cards, gift certificates, and maybe even a weekend away. A round of golf or a spa package. See our prize flyer at the hot link. Sponsors, if you are interested in becoming a sponsor, please see the sponsorship levels at the hot link and fill out the online form at the next hot link. Your sponsorship donation will place dozens of Braille books in the hands of children with vision loss. You may donate the amount for your sponsorship level below, or print our PDF form at the next hot link and email it along with your payment to Seedlings, P.O. Box 51924, Livonia, Michigan. That's Livonia, Michigan, 48151-5924. Thank you in advance for your generous donations. For more information, contact Seedlings at all4braille@gmail.com or call 734-427-8552, extension 301 or 307. Thank you for all of your help and support. From globalbusinessleadersmag.com, White Cane Coffee, changing the world with coffee and love. 20 influential leaders which everyone should know in 2022. Bias practices based on discrimination associated with factors like gender, sexual orientation, race, disability, and more have always existed in the process of recruitment. While some of these have been taken care of, others, like disability, tend to persist. Thus, one of the most disheartening facts about the corporate world is associated with the unwillingness of employers to offer jobs to the disabled. More than double the people having a disability are unemployed as compared to those without. Whether it is hearing, vision, or learning disability, people with impairments find it very difficult to find job acceptances. And in today's world, how can someone survive without earning? As a matter of fact, numerous elements drive this disparity, such as lesser disabled individuals graduating and prejudiced hiring procedures. Not to mention, the pandemic worsened the gap as the disabled got lesser options for working from home or remote and flexible jobs. One of the critical examples of such discrimination is that of a girl named Erin Willman. A 22-year-old with a vision impairment and autism, Willman was denied a job everywhere due to her disability. She explained, "People always see the glasses and the cane and immediately think what I'm unable to do." Considering the fact that a majority of people with a disability experience the same, Willman decided to start a business that employs individuals like her. Contradictory to other employers, she says here at White Cane, "When it comes to disabilities, we don't just see the disability. We see what people are capable of." Thus, primarily focused on changing the world one cup of coffee at a time, the idea behind the existence of White Cane Coffee is Erin's inspiration from her father. She says, "Ever since I was a little kid, my dad has told me to change the world. He has always said, as long as you can change one person's life, you can change the world." And gladly, she believes her business is changing plenty of lives. Aaron Willman, Changing the Business of Business. Aaron does not only serve delicious coffee, but also acts as a role model to several people globally. Whether it's a disabled person tired of the discrimination against them regarding employment, or it is a woman who has given up on her dream business, Aaron has taught people to fight against the odds and make things work in their favor. Having lost her vision at the age of 15, Aaron founded White Cane Coffee with the aid of her mother Vicki Willman and her father Bob Willman to provide hope, motivation, and employment to the disabled and blind. Still surprised to land her first job as the CEO of her own company after multiple rejections, she says, "I'm still kind of processing it. It's very surreal. We are a small business in a small town, and to be recognized globally it's cool in its own way, because big things don't just have to come from big places. It can come from small companies. Sometimes the smaller voices can make a larger impact." What sets Aaron apart from other business owners is the fact that establishing the company is not the only thing she has done to normalize the disabled in the workplace. Her other contributions include working with Perkins School, Helen Keller Institute, and organizations with similar motives. Serving the customers. The main storefront of White Cane Coffee is situated in the small, adorable town of Warren in Pennsylvania. Here, Willman sells a variety of cold brew blends, coffee whole beans, compostable separate cups, and ground. In fact, she has an assortment of coffee roasts for the enjoyment of her customers, which include breakfast blend, French roast, dark roast, high octane, Colombian Supremo decaf, donut shop, and Colombian Supremo. Erin is highly dedicated to ensuring that her customers get that perfect cup of coffee every morning. For the same, she even offers the choice of a monthly subscription, based on which people would get coffee delivered to their doorstep. And all this has been possible because of her will to change the world. What's more, the coffee bags and boxes have Braille on them, which is a clear indication of Aaron backing the blind community. She says coffee is something that is so ingrained into our culture that it almost seemed like a no-brainer to have coffee be the thing that links disabled people with abled people. The impact of White Cane Coffee. White Cane Coffee has a clear societal impact. It is helping standardize the disabled in companies. Further, by bringing the disabled and the abled together, it gives out the message of equality between the two. This also helps the latter better understand the plight of people with disabilities, further promoting employment of the impaired at large. Also, by employing the blind and disabled at her company, she is giving a loud, clear message to the world regarding the highest potential of the disabled. In fact, another significant impact of the establishment is associated with the environment. All the coffee is certified organic, and the environmentally conscious K-Cup is entirely compostable. Considering the extent to which Aaron is taking care of the environment while selling coffee, it is no surprise that she has been awarded the Global CEO Excellence Award for Best Organic Coffee Manufacturing CEO in the USA by CEO Monthly. The future of White Cane Coffee. With the rising popularity of the company, White Cane Coffee is expanding massively. It ships coffee boxes to people on a global scale, but hopes to further increase the number of countries. This will not only further aid in spreading the message, but also allow people to wake up to an incredible cup of coffee. So it's a win-win for everyone. Description of the logo. White Cane Coffee is a coffee manufacturer that ships organic coffee worldwide. The key motive behind the company is to normalize the blind and the disabled in the workplace. Company name, White Cane Coffee. Founding year, 2019. Office location, the main storefront of White Cane Coffee is in Warren, Pennsylvania. Official website of the company, https://whitecanecoffee.com. Name of featured leader, Aaron Willman. Designation of the leader, CEO. From nfb.org, Blindness, What It Means in the Mind of a Blind Child. American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults. Future Reflections, Special Issue, The Federation in Partnership, Learning Together. Article by Ramona Walhoff, WALHOF. Reprinted from Future Reflections, Volume 15, Number 2, Spring 1996. Reflections received a request from Oxford University Press. The publisher asked to reprint excerpts from an article by Ramona Walhoff in an upcoming book. The book, by Karen Sternberg, and tentatively titled The 21st Century Child, will be published in the fall of this year. It is expected to sell some 6,900 copies in print and electronic formats. Through this publication, our Federation literature and our perspective on blindness will reach a new audience of parents and educators. Here is Ramona Walhoff's article, which is as relevant today as it was when it first appeared 26 years ago. The article is based on a speech Ramona gave at the 1995 NFB National Convention. Perhaps you have heard the story about Johnny, who came running in from play to ask, "Mommy, Mommy, where did I come from?" Mommy thought 4 years old was a little young to be asking about the birds and bees, but she supposed she was up to it. She explained about growing for 9 months in the uterus inside her tummy, and then being born. Johnny was impatient to run back outside, but on the way he called over his shoulder, "I came from a uterus, but Michael came from California." We cannot read our children's minds. If we could, there would be many surprises. This is true of blindness, just as it is regarding other things. But there are some general things we do know. A child who is born blind does not know what it is like to see. Until he or she is old enough to begin to understand how other people do things, blindness seems normal. Therefore, a small child will not feel bad about blindness until someone teaches him or her, directly or indirectly, to feel bad. Editing for time, I continue. Blind people can tell you about the different reactions they had as children to all this discussion about seeing. I learned to lie about it. I tried to make people happy so they would leave me alone and I could go on to other things. Pretending to see sometimes got me special privileges and prestige at the school for the blind, and I knew I made my family members happy if I said I could see things. Nobody meant to teach me to lie, but that's what they did. Your child needs reassurance that blindness is okay, even before he or she really understands what blindness is. This is true because of what others say about it, and because a blind youngster may have fears, as I did, that there are associated with their lack of vision. If you have created an atmosphere where it's okay to talk about blindness, your child will have the language and the permission needed to express some of the things he or she is thinking or experiencing. It is important that a blind child learn how to interact with people who are getting information visually. In one sense, your child may borrow your eyes to read a story, learn about colors, identify a noise, and so forth. Sight is convenient, and blind people rely on sighted people for certain things. Blind children need to learn how eyesight works and how to interact with sighted people. It's a part of learning about blindness, but too much reliance upon someone else's sight deprives the child of skill and confidence. Thus, a blind child must learn to balance trusting their blind techniques and understanding the uses of vision. This is part of growing up for a blind child. It is not a disaster if we don't understand it all immediately. We keep learning about eyesight just as we keep learning about other things. When I was 40 or so, I was riding down the street with my two sighted teenagers, and I wanted to get some information about street signs. I said, "I want you to read me every sign you see." That was a mistake. They thought this was a wonderful opportunity. They couldn't talk fast enough to read all the signs out loud. They were deliberately taking advantage of the situation to read things they knew I didn't want to know. Not an unusual attitude for a teenager. But I learned something new from this experience. I knew that in a business district there are signs on practically every building, but I really had no concept of how many signs you could read while driving down one street. You have heard statistics about how much learning is visual. These figures are often used to indicate that blind children don't learn as much or as fast as other children do. This is not necessarily so, however. It is only true when we don't use the alternative techniques that are available to the blind. If a blind infant drops a set of keys on the floor and you lean down to pick them up, that can be a fun game. If you lower the baby down and put his or her hand on the keys, it might be even more fun. If you encourage the little one to move a hand back and forth on the floor to find the keys, that that's another kind of game, and that's learning. As the baby becomes a toddler, a little talk about where things go when they get thrown and dropped increases learning gradually. Sometimes the child will cooperate and enjoy the games, and sometimes not, but you keep playing them and making them more challenging and complex as the child learns. My friend Ollie was 3 years old when she first came to my house. She's blind and has mild cerebral palsy, so she has been slow to walk. However, she covers a lot of ground in her crawling. Within minutes after arriving at my house, Ollie was sitting in front of the refrigerator in the middle of a crowd of people in the kitchen, and she was in danger of being stepped on. Her father rescued her and explained that Ollie often heads for the fridge in new houses. She must find that big metal box with a motor humming and air blowing out very interesting. Later, I learned from Ollie's mother that she also likes to get things out of the fridge if she can reach them when the door is open. I have no idea when Ollie made the connection between the fan in the fridge and the food, but I know she did, and that's learning. It may not exactly be the same pattern that another child would follow, but that doesn't matter. Ollie learned about the fridge, and that's what's important. We reduce blindness to the level of a nuisance by using our own imaginations to figure out what techniques are best suited to specific experiences. Just because you never saw someone who is blind doing a thing doesn't mean it can't be done. Like other children, blind children need to learn about appropriate and inappropriate behavior. That gets a little complicated sometimes because blind children should do some things differently. For example, it's okay for a blind baby to feel your face, and they often do. But this behavior becomes socially unacceptable at a very young age. Before school age, a blind child needs to learn that it is not a good idea to put their hands all over other people. It is better for a young boy to be scolded and learn a lesson about getting along with his peers than for him to be branded to be avoided by his classmates. This means parents have an extra responsibility in teaching social skills to their blind youngsters. Blind children need information even when they don't ask for it and don't take it. We must keep reminding them when we see inappropriate behavior. When my children were small, I grew very tired of having to fuss at them for doing the same thing over and over. I tried to be creative in finding ways not to nag. This spring, my youngest graduated from college, a real milestone for both of us. He's selling books this summer, as he has done throughout college. He said to me, "Don't let me stay with the company beyond the summer." Amazed, I asked what he wanted me to do about it if he did. "Nag me," he answered. I told him I didn't like to nag, and I thought he didn't like being nagged either. What do you suppose he said? "Sometimes it works." I found that most interesting, and I pass it on for what it's worth. Many blind children feel no need to hold their heads erect. Not only does this look funny, it also causes underdevelopment of the muscles in the neck and back. Constant reminders and creative motivators must be tried. There's no simple solution, but it's worth working on. When they get to be 16 or 20, they will be very glad if they've developed the practice of holding their heads up and looking at other people. One evening, I was talking with a blind 8-year-old who was jumping up and down and flopping his body around. Thinking I could subtly change his behavior, I suggested we sit down. We did and continued our conversation, and he continued to jump around. By and by, I mentioned that most 8-year-olds don't jump around all the time. "Oh," he said, "I do that all the time." "Yes," I said, "that's why I brought it up. It makes you look funny." I did not get much response, but the repetition of the same message in different ways will get through. Sometimes we just have to figure out how to make the message matter, and there may be some value in using a blend of shock techniques and repetition. No technique is right for every situation, and frequently a change of emphasis from day to day is desirable. How many times in a day or a week do children have to face somebody who does not really believe in them? What does it do to their confidence and self-esteem? We cannot quickly change these attitudes, but what we have to offer is valuable. We can reassure blind children that somebody does understand. We can offer the opportunity to talk about blindness and learn the skills that help reduce it to the level of a nuisance. We can share with these children the successes, frustrations, grief, and excitement of growing up as a blind person. Blindness is a characteristic that these children do not share with most of their peers. To talk about it when they can is important, and we must find ways to give them this opportunity. I visited a 1-week camp for blind children who attend public schools in Idaho. I was introduced to a group of about 10 teenagers. Most had returned to the camp for at least their second year. After telling them who I was, I asked why they liked the camp and why they came back. No answers. I told them I thought I knew. I suggested that the camp gives them an opportunity to share experiences with others who are blind. Immediately, the room was abuzz with chatter and questions. My few minutes grew into a whole class period. These youngsters wanted to talk about jobs, careers, and discrimination, what it is and what to do about it, the attitudes of parents, teachers, and peers about blindness, and all the topics we have touched on. At camp, there were counselors who would discuss blindness in the evenings, but they were not blind themselves. It makes a difference. I didn't have all the answers to the children's questions, but that did not seem to matter. They were eager to share with me, and they have my thoughts to ponder. The NFB training centers in Louisiana, Colorado, and Minnesota sponsor summer programs for blind children and teens. Their staff members, most of whom are blind like me, will tell you the same thing. Children are eager to learn about blindness from those they know have had real experiences. They are glad for the opportunity to experiment with the skills and attitudes about blindness that they are learning. When I see a child the child always wants to take hold of my cane. At first, she wants to talk about it and compare it to her own. Now she just wants to grasp it for a moment and go on with whatever she's doing and saying, I think this is her way of saying, I'm glad you and I have canes in common. The National Federation of the Blind provides the rhythm and the melody for us all to march forward together to change public attitudes about blindness. We have young, energetic leaders who depend on all of us to make the music and move ahead. Our children are learning to play the instruments that broadcast our message to the world. One or a few persons cannot make the band move forward or sound good. The fullness of sound and the impressiveness of configurations on the field come from planning and rehearsals. Each individual must play a part and coordinate with the others. Because of our togetherness, we are all more successful than any one could be alone. We meet at this convention to renew our spirits and improve our skills and our understanding. As adults, both blind and sighted, we need what we came here to partake of, and we bring our children, for they need it too. They need what they will find this week, and they depend on us throughout the year to help them improve their skills and grow in their understanding. When our children become section leaders, one day our band will be welcomed by society as a leading part of the parade, not merely with sympathy because the blind are doing better than expected, but with honor because the high quality of our performance can no longer be denied. This is what we hope and plan for our children, and this is what they dream. We must do what we can to facilitate their dreams. This is our goal for ourselves, and this is our pledge to the next generation. So that article was published in 96, and the speaker was at the NFB convention in 95. From VentureBeat.com, Microsoft confirms hackers are actively exploiting Exchange zero-day flaws. Article by Tim Keary, K-E-A-R-Y. Microsoft Exchange Server is one of those enterprise staples, but it's also a key target for cybercriminals. Last week, GTSC reported attacks had begun chaining two new zero-day Exchange exploits as part of coordinated attacks. While information is limited, Microsoft has confirmed a blog post that these exploits have been used by a suspected state-sponsored threat actor to target fewer than 10 organizations and successfully exfiltrate data. The vulnerabilities themselves affect Exchange Server 2013, 2016, and 2019. The first, CVE-2022-41040, is a server-side request forgery, SSRF, vulnerability. And the second, CVE-2022-41082, enables remote code execution if the attacker has access to PowerShell. When combined together, an attacker can use the SSRF flag to remotely deploy malicious code to a target network. Event, Low Code/No Code Summit. Join today's leading executives at the Low Code, No Code Summit virtually on November 9th. Register for your free pass today at the hot link. On-premises, Microsoft Exchange Server, an irresistible target. Given that 65,000 companies use Microsoft Exchange, enterprises need to be prepared for other threat actors to exploit these vulnerabilities. After all, this isn't the first time on-premises Exchange servers have been targeted as part of an attack. In March last year, a Chinese threat actor called Hafnium exploited 4 zero-day vulnerabilities in on-premises versions of Exchange Server and successfully hacked at least 30,000 U.S. organizations. During these attacks, Hafnium stole user credentials to gain access to enterprises' Exchange servers and deployed malicious code to achieve remote admin access and began harvesting sensitive data. While only a handful of organizations have been targeted by this unknown state-sponsored threat actor, Exchange is a high-value target for cybercriminals because it provides a gateway to lots of valuable information. Exchange is a juicy target for threat actors to exploit for two primary reasons, said Travis Smith, Vice President of Malware Threat Research at Qualys, Qualys. First, Exchange is an email server, so it must be connected directly to the Internet. And being directly connected to the Internet creates an attack surface which is accessible from anywhere in the world, drastically increasing its risk of being attacked, Smith said. Secondly, Exchange is a mission-critical function. Organizations can't just unplug or turn off email without severely impacting their business in a negative way, Smith said. So, how bad is it? One of the main limitations of these vulnerabilities from an attacker's perspective is that they need to have authenticated access to an Exchange server to leverage the exploits. While this is a barrier, the reality is that login credentials are easy for threat actors to harvest, whether through purchasing one of the 15 billion passwords exposed on the dark web or tricking employees into handing them over via phishing emails or social engineering attacks. At this stage, Microsoft anticipates that there will be an uptick in activity around the threat. In a blog released on the 30th of September, Microsoft noted it is expected that similar threats and overall exploitation of these vulnerabilities will increase as security researchers and cybercriminals adopt the published research into their toolkits and proof-of-concept code becomes available. How to reduce the risk? Although there's no patch available for the updates yet, Microsoft has released a list of remediation actions that enterprises can take to secure their environments. Microsoft recommends that enterprises should review and apply the URL rewrite instructions in Microsoft Security Response Center post, and has released a script to mitigate the SSRF vulnerability. The organization also suggests that organizations using Microsoft 365 Defender take the following actions. Activate the cloud-delivered protection in Microsoft Defender Antivirus. Turn on tamper protection. Run EDR in block mode. Enable network protection. Enable investigation and remediation in full automated mode. Enable network protection to prevent users and apps from accessing malicious domains. Indirectly, organizations can also look to reduce the risk of exploitation by emphasizing security awareness and educating employees about social engineering threats and the importance of proper password management to reduce the chance of a cybercriminal gaining administrative access to Exchange. Lastly, it's maybe time for organizations to consider whether running an on-premises Exchange server is necessary. VentureBeat's mission is to be a digital town square for technical decision makers to gain knowledge about transformative enterprise technology and transact. There's a hot link to discover our briefings. And I'm running out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.